So the longer you go without sleeping, the stronger your sleep drive, your hunger for sleep becomes. And that will help you not only to fall asleep, but sustain sleep.
Hello, welcome to the Sleep to Healthy. I'm your instructor, Dennis Trumpy, and this is lesson number 5 of the Sleep to Healthy, How to Cure Your Insomnia class. This lesson is titled Compact Sleep, the New Sleep Metric. In the last lesson, we had an overview of all 5 elements of CBTI, or Cognitive Behavioral Therapy for Insomnia. Compact Sleep, Sleep Buddy, Sleep Myths, Stress Reduction, and Sleep Tips. We learned how the different elements fit together and which one to focus on first. Today's lesson will cover the first element and the one that many CBTI experts consider the most vital, compact sleep. You will learn why compact sleep is so central to beating your insomnia, and I will give you step-by-step instructions on how to execute your compact sleep plan. Compact sleep is all about how much time you spend in bed sleeping versus not sleeping. If you ask a good sleeper to describe their night in bed, they would say that they go to bed, fall asleep, maybe get up in the night to go to the washroom, fall back to sleep quickly, wake up in the morning, oftentimes before the alarm goes off, and get going on the day. If you ask a person with insomnia the same question, they would likely say that they go to bed, lay in bed for 30 minutes or more waiting for sleep, wake up several times during the night, and struggle to get back to sleep each time. If it's a weekday, they wake up reluctantly when the alarm goes off, but usually after hitting the snooze button a few times. If it's the weekend, they will stay in bed as late as possible, trying to catch up on all their lost sleep. The key difference I want you to focus on is that the person who sleeps well mainly sleeps during the night, while the person with insomnia spends a high percentage of their night not sleeping. At some point in your life, even if it was many years ago, you were a good sleeper. Something happened, and now you spend much of your bed duration not sleeping. Basically, you got some flawed habits, trying your very best to cope with a bad situation. As we explained in Lesson 3 on insomnia, you had a trigger that caused the short bout of insomnia, such as a stressful life event, like a bad relationship or high job stress. In response, you decided you need to catch up on your lost sleep, and so you spent more time in bed by going to bed earlier or sleeping in later. It felt great to get an extra hour's sleep, so it seemed like the right decision. What you didn't realize was that you were cutting yourself short on your sleep pressure with the longer-term negative results. In Lesson 2, when we covered sleep, we learned that from the time you wake up until you go to sleep, your brain is steadily building up adenosine, which causes your brain to get more and more sleepy. Your brain relies on you to build up enough sleep pressure to give you the reserves that you need to get to sleep quickly and to stay asleep all the way through the night. Let's say that you require 7 hours of sleep a night. There are 24 hours in a day, so if 7 hours are spent sleeping, then you need 24 minus 7, which equals 17 hours, to build up your sleep pressure. What you didn't realize when you started adding an extra hour in bed was that you were cutting your sleep pressure by a full hour. So you only built up your sleep pressure for 16 hours rather than 17 hours. This made it harder to get to sleep and to stay asleep the next night. After a night or two of robbing yourself of this much needed sleep pressure, you started finding it harder to get to sleep and to stay asleep. Even after the original insomnia-causing event occurred, you were into this new sleep pattern that perpetuated the insomnia. So that is a likely scenario as how you went from being a good sleeper to someone who struggles to get a good night's sleep. But now, the problem's even more complex. First, you're spending too much time in bed, which means that your sleep pressure isn't fully developing, so you don't have the sleep reserves you need to sleep well the next night. Second, you've lost confidence in your ability to sleep. You think it is beyond your grasp. You think your sleep system is broken. After all, you've tried many different potions and methods to improve your sleep, all posted on the internet, and none of it is working. So it must be you, right? Not right. Your sleep systems are working fine and dandy, and they always will. You just need to do the right things and sit back and let sleep happen as it's supposed to. And third, you have come to believe that you have to work at sleep. You think, whereas sleep comes easily for other people, it's a struggle for you. Unless you work at it, it just ain't going to happen. Well, guess what? Sleep does just happen, and you can't force it. Let me explain what's happening. Humans are great at identifying cause and effect. We get hit by our sibling, feel it hurts, and learn not to tick them off again. We see a ball hit a window, see the glass shatter, and learn that balls can break windows. The problem is that we often get these cause and effect relationships all wrong. For instance, we try singing in front of a family member. They tell us that we sound terrible, and so we avoid singing for the rest of our lives, even though we likely have a perfectly fine singing voice. We visit someone, and they're impatient and rude to us. We conclude that we caused their rude reaction because they don't like us, when in fact they had a migraine headache. In the same way, we can have a good night's sleep and put the cause on the wrong source. We take an herbal tea and sleep well, and we think the herbal tea caused us to sleep well. We read a book before bedtime, sleep well that night, and think the book caused our good night's sleep. But that's not the true story, and here's why. This is how sleep works. First, you stay up long enough for your sleep drive to build to the point that you can sleep well. Second, your circadian rhythm prepares your brain to go from wakefulness to sleep, which signals to your brain that it can go from its wakeful state to its sleep state. Three, your brain makes sure that it's safe to sleep. Sleep is your most vulnerable time of day, so your brain is not going to let you sleep unless it feels safe. Stress, anxiety, fear, they'll all stop you from sleeping well. As long as you don't have any of the factors for insomnia, covered in Lesson 3, interfering with your sleep, the chances are you will have a decent night's sleep. And that's it. Stay up long enough, get ready for sleep, be calm, and let sleep happen. You don't and can't force anything. There are two key points here. First, I say that you have a reasonable chance of a good night's sleep because you can't make sleep happen directly. All you can do is set up the conditions for sleep and then let go and let the brain do what it's been designed to do for millions of years. Sleep. Nobody hits 100%. Occasionally, not sleeping well is perfectly normal, especially if you're experiencing any type of stress or insomnia-causing event. Second, in terms of things that you believe help you to sleep, but are not on the CBTI curriculum, I have this to say. Herbal tea and reading before bedtime do not change your sleep drive, nor do they change your circadian rhythm. They might help you prepare for sleep if you happen to turn the lights down and they helped you to calm down. They might also have taken your mind off your worries and relaxed you, but directly, they did not cause you to sleep. The point is that there are any number of things that you can do to relax and prepare for sleep. There's no magic formula and certainly no single cure-all. Find what works for you and be flexible as you change over time, and what helps today might not be what helps, say, a year from now. Another way of thinking of this is to look at the causes of insomnia list in Lesson 3. If you think your herbal tea or reading before bedtime causes you to sleep well, then look on the list. I don't see stopped taking herbal tea or stopped reading as a cause of insomnia. If their withdrawals don't cause insomnia, it's highly unlikely that using them cures insomnia. It is important to repeat again what has been said in the last two lessons, that if you have anything that is causing your insomnia, you should take care of this first to the degree that you are able to. It is not herbal tea, nor the book that causes your sleep. It is preparing for bed and relaxing and letting your brain naturally take you to sleep. But by now, you probably have it firmly entrenched that certain things you are doing or taking are causing you to sleep or causing you not to sleep. They are not directly responsible for your sleep. I will repeat, the things that are responsible for your sleep are A. healthy sleep drive built up by staying awake long enough. B. your circadian rhythm triggering your brain to go from alertness to sleep. C. an absence of stress or fear. And 4. minimal sleep disruptors. But right now, our focus is to bust out of your vicious insomnia cycle. This is going to be tough, so it will take extra effort and discipline to undo these habits and associations. Compact sleep works mainly on the first factor listed, increasing your sleep drive. It also starts to regulate your circadian rhythm and will reduce your sleep stress. But the other CBTI elements deal more directly with these elements. Compact sleep works by increasing your sleep drive to the point that you have trouble keeping your eyes open and you can't help but sleep. By doing this for a while, you will start to get to sleep quickly and begin to spend much more of your time sleeping and much less time awake while in bed. This creates the confidence you need to prove to yourself that your sleep system is working just fine. This reduces your sleep-related stress. It is that simple and very effective. High sleep efficiency means that you use your bed efficiently for sleep, so that most of the time you spend in bed, you are sleeping. Low sleep efficiency means that you don't use your bed very efficiently for sleeping. You waste your time on getting to sleep or waking up and staying up during the night. I will show you how to measure your sleep efficiency later in the lesson, but you probably already know intuitively whether you are an efficient sleeper or not. Sleep efficiency is important for a few reasons. The first is that it's a high predictor of whether you have insomnia or not. If your efficiency is low, then you likely have insomnia. If we improve your efficiency, then your insomnia will improve. The second is that poor efficiency by itself perpetuates insomnia. When it takes you an inordinately long time to get to sleep, it causes stress. You start to worry about it or when or if you will ever get to sleep, which is stressful in itself. The same goes for nighttime awakenings. If you wake at night and can't get back to sleep, it likely leads to stress, wondering if you ever will get back to sleep, and how poorly you'll feel the next day, and how hopeless the situation is, and so on. And the third is that low sleep efficiency weakens your sleep system. If your sleep efficiency is poor, it means that you're going to bed earlier than you should, and/or you're getting up later than you should. This means that your sleep drive is weaker because the time from getting out of bed to going to bed is shorter than it should be, and your sleep drive, which builds up steadily the longer you are awake, has not had the time to become as strong as it needs to be for you to easily get back to sleep. Because you start your sleep with the sleep drive weaker than ideal, then the sleep drive, which gradually reduces while you're asleep, is also weak in the middle of the night, so it makes it harder to get back to sleep if and when you wake in the middle of the night. I like to put it this way. Sleep is like a roller coaster. Your sleep stages are all the turns and ups and downs of the roller coaster ride. To start the ride, you need to take that long initial climb up to the top of the very first summit. Not having enough sleep drive is like having the roller coaster cars stalling before they get to the top. You can't start the first descent until you reach the peak. In the same way, you can't fall off to sleep easily until you've built up enough sleep drive. That is like laying awake at night trying to get to sleep because your sleep drive has not built up high enough yet. Continuing the roller coaster analogy, if you manage to start on the first descent without first reaching the peak, then you won't make it through all the twists and turns and ups and downs. You will get to a small incline, but won't be able to make it all the way up the other side. That's like waking up in the middle of the night and not being able to get back to sleep because you started the night with a slow, low sleep drive. So low sleep efficiency means that you have lost confidence in your ability to sleep well, causes unnecessary sleep stress, and perpetuates your inability to sleep well. Now, we need to get into some technical details to see how we measure how compact our sleep is, how compact your sleep should be, and how you get from where you are to where you want to be. Are you ready for the ride of your life? Let's talk about how compact your sleep is. I will go through this once to give you an overview, and then again more slowly to fill in the details. Here is the overview. Compact sleep is measured by sleep efficiency. Sleep efficiency is the ratio of how much time you are sleeping, which I call sleep duration, divided by how long you stay in bed, which I call bed duration. Sleep duration divided by bed duration. Your bed duration goes from the time you get into bed at night until you get out of bed in the morning. So, to get sleep efficiency, you take the amount of time you sleep, your sleep duration, divide it by your bed duration, and multiply by 100. Your goal will be to get between 80 and 90% sleep efficiency. Simple as that. The calculations are difficult to explain clearly in audio format, so I recommend that you head over to my website at sleeptohealthy.com for a written explanation, sleep efficiency calculators, flowcharts, and worksheets. Everything you need to work through this rather technical aspect of CBTI is available in Lesson 5 at sleeptohealthy.com. Now, let's dig into the details to see how this fits together with an example. First, bed duration. Note the time you go to bed and the time you wake up in the morning. That duration is your sleep duration. Even if you got out of bed during the night, you still count that as part of your bed duration because the intent at night is to sleep all the way through the night in your bed. So, let's say that you go to bed at 10 p.m., and you get out of bed at 7 a.m. Then your duration is 9 hours. You get that by starting with 7 a.m. and counting back the number of hours to get to 10 p.m. when you went to bed. Even if you got out of bed to read for an hour during the night because you couldn't get back to sleep, you would still count it as a full 9 hours. The only caveat is that if you read in bed before turning out the lights to sleep, then use the time you turned out the lights as the start of your bed duration. The same goes if you start that night with sex. In the morning, you should get out of bed and active right away. This helps to set your circadian rhythm to a regular schedule, which your sleep system just loves. The next part, sleep duration, is a bit more tricky. That is because it's hard to measure sleep time directly because if you keep looking at the clock to measure your time awake, it will likely cause you to stay awake longer than you normally would. Your bed duration is composed of two activities, sleeping time and non-sleeping time or awake time. The way you calculate your sleep duration is to measure your awake time and subtract it from your bed duration to get your sleep duration. Let me explain. Awake time would include the time it takes for you to drift off to sleep. It also includes all the time you are awake during the night, whether you stay in bed or get up to do something else. If you go to my website, I have methods to estimate your awake time. The method is awkward to explain on audio, but easily explained on the website with diagrams, calculators, and tables. The basics of it are that you record the time you were awake in the previous awakening on a conveniently placed piece of paper. In the morning, you add up your awakenings for your total awake time. If you sleep with a partner, they can help estimate your time it takes for you to initially get off to sleep. Your sleep duration is equal to your bed duration minus your awake time. Although I discourage wearables for tracking your sleep, this is the one exception where a wearable could be helpful in calculating your sleep efficiency. Just do your best not to use it as a performance measuring device, as that can lead to sleep stress. And don't worry about your different sleep stages. Also, be aware that wearables are often not very good at detecting sleep. So I would recommend you write down your awake times and make sure it corresponds to what your wearable is telling you before trusting it. Sleep efficiency is calculated as a percentage. 100% sleep efficiency means that as soon as you laid down in bed, you fell asleep instantly. You slept all the way through the night without interruption, and in the morning, you got out of bed as soon as you woke up. You would have spent 100% of your time in bed, fast asleep. Nobody sleeps at this level. 0% efficiency would mean that you got into bed and did not sleep a wink all night long. In the morning, you got out of bed not having even 1 minute's sleep. By the way, insomniacs, like you, are notoriously poor at estimating your sleep efficiency. If I was to hook you up to a sleep monitoring device which accurately measures the amount of sleep you actually had, your estimate would probably be about 1 hour less sleep than the sleep monitor would indicate. So you are likely sleeping better than you think. And that is why we need to measure it and not just estimate it off the top of our head. The way you measure your sleep efficiency is as follows. Sleep efficiency is equal to sleep duration divided by bed duration times 100. A normal sleeper has an efficiency of 80 to 90%. So what does that mean? Let's say you get 7 hours of sleep a night. If your sleep efficiency is 80%, then you're going to spend about 8¾ hours in bed to get that 7 hours sleep and spend about 1¾ hours not sleeping. 7 hours sleep duration divided by 8¾ hours bed duration equals 0.8 or 80%. If your efficiency is 90%, then you're going to spend about 3/4 of an hour not sleeping. So, if you need 7 hours of sleep a night, it would be considered perfectly normal for you to be awake up to 1¾ hours a night. That is quite a bit of awake time. What I want you to focus on here is that you can be a normal sleeper and have a whooping 1¾ hours of awake time each night. I think this might surprise you, as you likely think that being awake that amount of time each night would classify you as a poor sleeper and having insomnia. Another thing I need to point out is that nighttime awakenings are perfectly normal, and everyone has them, and I mean everyone. A very good sleeper does not necessarily remember them, as they gently ease out of sleep for a few minutes and then drift back to sleep and don't remember it in the morning. But when people are hooked up to a sleep monitor for the night, they always show nighttime awakenings. This makes sense, as nighttime awakenings are necessary for human survival. You are susceptible to dangers while sleeping, so you need to wake up periodically to check things out. Now, back to your sleep efficiency. You should do this exercise for a week and then take the average. Make sure you include at least one night before a weekend or non-working day. I have a calculator for calculating the average in my sleeptohealthy.com website. As an example, let's assume that your average bed duration is 8 3/4 hours and your average awake time was 3 hours. So your average sleep duration was 8 3/4 minus 3, which is 5 3/4 hours. This is how much time you are averaging per night sleeping, 5 3/4 of sleep, with a duration of 8 3/4, gives a sleep efficiency of 66%, which is below the 80-90% average. You may be wondering, what do I do with this information? You use it to determine how long your initial bed duration should be to compact your sleep. The rule is simple. Your new bedtime duration is equal to your average sleep duration as long as this is not below 5 hours. If your average sleep duration is below 5 hours, set your bed duration to 5 hours. In our example case, the bed duration would be set to 5 3/4 hours. This is just a starting point. I will show you how to adjust it as time goes on in a minute. You may also judge this as harsh, which it is. Compacting your inefficient sleep is not easy, and research has shown that you are much more likely to be successful at compacting your sleep if you go cold turkey and make your bedtime a bit on the short side rather than on the long side. I want to cure your insomnia as quickly as possible, so you will have to endure a few nights with less sleep than normal to get to the light at the end of the tunnel more quickly. If you have trouble figuring out your sleep time for whatever reason, take your best estimate of what your sleep time is and go from there. It's better to start with an imperfect number than to not to start at all. You could think back to when you used to sleep well and estimate what your sleep time was then. When figuring out when to go to bed and wake up, the normal recommendation is to keep your wake time the same and adjust the time you go to bed. So in our example, if you normally wake up at 7 a.m., turn the clock back 5 3/4 hours, and you get a bedtime of 1:15 a.m. Yep, you heard that right, 1:15 a.m. as a bedtime. It is important to keep your wake-up time consistent each day. Here's some insights from Dr. Daniel Erickson.
And it works by exploiting your natural sleep drive to help you sleep better. And a word on that, what is sleep drive? Well, sleep, just as hunger, is homeostatically regulated, which simply means that just as you become more and more hungry the longer you go without eating, the more and more sleepy you become the longer you go without sleeping. So the longer you go without sleeping, the stronger your sleep drive, your hunger for sleep becomes, and that will help you not only to fall asleep, but sustain sleep. So in light of that, ask yourself how much time you think you need to sleep, how much sleep you need. If it's hard, then you can think back upon a time where you didn't have any obligations, a time where you were on vacation, and how much you slept at that point in time. If you have really no way to gauge it, then just pick 7 hours, because that's the typical amount of time that people feel they need to sleep. The second thing you need to ask yourself is, what is a convenient time for you to wake up and get out of bed in the morning? And using those two things, we will create a sleep schedule for you to work on over the next 2 weeks.
When I did my sleep efficiency training, I found that going to bed at night out of sync with my wife was too stressing. So I opted for going to bed at the same time as my wife and waking up early. For me, that meant waking up at around 4:30 a.m. for a while, which I actually came to enjoy. An important aspect of CBTI is to use the system to work for you, not against you. As you know, the number one enemy of sleep is, say it with me, fear, stress, and anxiety. Do this for 2 weeks while continuing to record your sleep efficiency. Don't expect a gradual and even improvement. Each night will be different, some better, some worse. But you want to look for the overall trend. At the end of the 2 weeks, look at the last 3 or 4 days of sleep entries. Here is how you adjust. If your sleep efficiency was above 90%, then you have earned yourself an extra 15 minutes of bed duration. If your sleep efficiency was between 80 and 90%, then steady as she goes, don't make any changes yet. If your sleep efficiency is below 80%, then you reduce your bed duration by 15 minutes. But don't bring your bed duration below 5 hours. You need 5 hours to get a reasonable amount of N3 or deep sleep, which is important for your health and well-being. Keep going, adjusting weekly until you find your bed duration where your efficiency is between 80 and 90% and you feel reasonably well rested during the day. There are complete instructions for how to adjust your sleep duration along with an easy-to-follow flowchart on my sleeptohealthy.com website. Dr. Daniel Erickson has this to say.
If you did pick up a pen and a paper and you followed you tracked your sleep efficiency and your sleep times and how well you're sleeping, then let's review that right now. So firstly, if you feel as if you're sleeping pretty good at night and you're feeling pretty refreshed during the day, well then congratulations, you have cured your insomnia, which is fantastic that you can be a little bit more relaxed when it comes to your bedtime and your wake-up time. But you should probably still spend about the same amount of time you're in bed now going forward. If you find that you're sleeping less amount of time than you thought you needed, well, then that's probably the case. You probably needed a little bit less sleep than you thought. That is very common. If you at this point, after either restricting your time in bed from the last video or extending your time in bed from that last video, if you're feeling better, if you're feeling that most of the time you're in bed, you're sleeping and you're not feeling sleepy during the day, then congratulations, you have cured your insomnia or at least improved it significantly, I'm hopeful. And that's fantastic. That is great. I'm very happy for you. And I would say do what you're doing now. You probably don't want to change anything too much. If you have problems later on, then start, you know, restricting your time in bed or seek more information about cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. And maybe most importantly here, if you have benefited from restricting your time in bed, please tell other people that have insomnia about cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia and about bedtime restriction. Let's say you restrict your time in bed and you're feeling like you are sleeping a little bit more solidly, you're spending more of the time in bed sleeping, and you're not feeling very sleepy during the day, then you are on the right path. I think you could either continue doing what you're doing now, maybe spend a little bit less time in bed to see how things work out.
If you are 65 or older, you can use a sleep efficiency target of 75 to 85% rather than the 80 to 90%. This means if your efficiency is below 75%, then reduce your bedtime by 15 minutes. If your sleep efficiency is above 85%, you can increase your bed duration by 15 minutes. This is because it's normal and natural for your sleep efficiency to decrease with age. You'll have a harder time getting to sleep, and you'll have more frequent and longer nighttime awakenings. And we don't want to outcompete Mother Nature, as it will only lead to frustration and stress. It can take 4 weeks or longer to figure out your sweet spot. Don't get impatient if it doesn't work quickly. You are undoing a whole swack of bad habits and conditioned responses that have built up over years, so it'll take some time. all this has your head spinning, then head over to my website at sleeptohealthy.com for a written explanation, sleep efficiency calculators, flowcharts, and worksheets. Everything you need to work through this rather technical aspect of CBTI is available in Lesson 5 at sleeptohealthy.com. On a positive note, you might notice something unexpected happening. Your ability to endure sleepiness might be better than you were expecting. In other words, you might be as tired or even more tired than before. You likely will feel even more wretched than before. But you might also notice that you are able to be less short-tempered, less irritable, and more able to focus and be productive. Your life will be better even though you're sleeping less. This is because you're going through this ordeal by your own choice and with an attitude of hope. This should demonstrate to you that at least part of your sleep suffering is from your own attitude and beliefs about sleep and insomnia, and not totally about the experience of insomnia itself. Pain is part of life. At least some of the suffering is optional. Even with sleep deprivation, you can still laugh at a joke, feel the joy of being with someone you love, relish a walk outside, or just take a breath and appreciate the miracle of being alive. The difference is that you are taking control of your insomnia, not your insomnia controlling your life. Enjoy the change of mindset. The other is that your sleep episodes should be longer. You will feel better with less total sleep when that sleep is less interrupted than you feel with longer but more interrupted sleep. This is a great lesson to learn. Now that you understand the harshness of this method, a couple of warnings are in order. First, you should consider consulting your healthcare provider before starting this. Second, it will likely make you even more sleepy and lower functioning during the day, at least for a while. If being even more sleepy and more foggy thinking during the day could have serious consequences, then you need to weigh the longer-term potential benefit against the shorter-term risk. A sleep professional may be able to help you work through this with a modified schedule and monitoring if it's an issue. If you judge that compacting your sleep in this way will have negative effects on you, then you need to act with prudence. For instance, if you operate heavy equipment or drive for a job, you'll want to decide if temporarily restricting your sleep will put you or others in danger. You might want to save this for a time when you are off work for an extended period of time, such as on a vacation. I don't know your situation, so you have to make the best judgment for your situation. If you think that compacting your sleep might interfere with a medical condition such as triggering seizures, or if you have bipolar disorder, then you should consult your healthcare provider before embarking on this element of CBTI. Only you can make the decision between long-term benefits and the short-term price. Only you know your particular situation. So I cannot advise you one way or the other as to whether this element of CBTI is suitable for you. I would say that working on your sleep efficiency is the hardest, but also the fastest way to get out of your insomnia rut. A few weeks of suffering can provide a lifetime of relief. Be tough and ride it out. But if you notice any medical condition deteriorating, then quickly consult your healthcare provider. If you believe that you are putting yourself or others at risk for safety, then act appropriately and responsibly. The adjustments to your sleep duration are made gradually because you need to let your brain create a new normal. One night of high efficiency will not do it. It needs to be sustained so your brain is trained on the new expectation. One of the challenges to going through this process is staying up when you really, really want to go to sleep. You want to balance being stimulated enough to stay awake with winding down and relaxing so you can get to sleep quickly when bedtime does arrive. I don't have any hot tips for you. You'll have to figure that out by yourself. but keeping the body moving, such as walking, cleaning, organizing, or even standing, is better than being in a position where sleep is likely to take over prematurely. Even standing while watching TV or reading a book can help. Remember, this endurance feat is temporary. A few difficult evenings will give long-term beneficial results. Here's some advice from Michael Schwartz.
It really does work in just about every case. And often in my experience, just anecdotally, whenever it kind of doesn't work, it's usually because maybe a patient is on a lot of medications for different things, and those medications are interacting with each other, and there's not much you can do behaviorally. Or the person has significant sleep apnea that needs to be treated. That's another person who probably won't, quote unquote, succeed with CBTI, because maybe their main problem is not classic conditioned insomnia.
During the day, you may be inclined to nap. It is preferred not to nap, but if you do, do your napping before 4 p.m. and limit your nap time to 20 to 25 minutes. Napping might be necessary to achieve a level of alertness and focus you need for your job. If your nap time is longer, you will begin to deplete your sleep drive and defeat the purpose of this exercise. You should find that the nap will improve your alertness level and make it easier to stick to the program. You decide whether a nap is appropriate in your situation. If in the future you find yourself starting to slip back into having insomnia, one of the first places I would look to is your sleep efficiency. I'll give a personal example that shows how we can naturally look for causes that don't exist when we should be looking at sleep efficiency, which is your new sleep metric. A short while ago, I was noticing that I was having more trouble than usual staying asleep. I seemed to be waking up more often, and when I awoke, my mind was more active than usual, which made it harder to get back to sleep. It was winter time, and sunrise was long after I woke up. Also, in the summer, I'm physically active all day long, whereas in the winter, I tend to spend a lot of time being idle on the computer, although I do exercises and go for long walks most days. So I convinced myself that my insomnia was due to my not getting exposure to sunlight first thing in the morning and being idle. I was starting to despair and wondering, maybe I should take a winter holiday down south and start using a bright light therapy upon awakening in the morning. Then it dawned to me that my sleep efficiency was down because I had gradually increased my bed duration to make up for the lack of sleep. As soon as I realized this, I restricted my sleep duration to where it should be, and my nighttime awakenings returned to their normal state within like a night or two. This shows you how easy it can be to get misled about the sources of our insomnia, and how easy it is to get back on track once you've been through the CBTI regime. In the future, if you've gone through compacting your sleep, you likely won't even have to measure your sleep efficiency to know whether it's an issue or not. Now that we're starting to get into the tough elements of CBTI, I'd like to point the way to some help from Dr. Daniel Erickson.
I think the best thing to do if you would like some more guidance and help and support and education is go to bedtime.co, and that's bedtime with a Y, so bedtyme.co. On that site, you will find information about my app called Bedtime, but you'll also find links to my podcast/YouTube channel as well as my blog. Particularly on that YouTube channel/podcast, it's really the same content into two different forms. You will find a wealth of information, education, interviews with people that have insomnia, replies to people that have insomnia, etc. So I think you'll find a lot there to help you. And if you want a more kind of curated course with built-in coaching, with a built-in human coach, then definitely check out the app Bedtime.
The magic of Dr. Erickson's app, Sleep Time, that is time spelled with a Y instead of an I, TYME, is that this feature-rich app comes with personalized coaching from Dr. Erickson himself, a CBTI expert. There will be a link to the app on my website. So that's it for Compact Sleep. If you are researching it on your own, you should use the proper CBTI term, which is sleep restriction therapy. I don't like that term because it focuses on the wrong aspect of the practice and it scares people off. That's why I call it Compact Sleep. Next lesson, we will be covering Sleep Buddy. This is the second of the two most powerful of the CBTI elements, and it is as counterintuitive as compacting your sleep is. With Sleep Buddy, we are going to learn how to tell when you should be heading to bed, what you should do when you can't get to sleep and when you wake up at night, and how to stop your brain from jumping around like a tree full of monkeys.
Okay, so I want to talk about failed strategies for sleep. What are things that people do that don't work? There's really four big ones I want to talk about, and they are commonly tried and they don't work. And the first one is literally trying too hard, where a person's trying to force themselves to sleep or back to sleep. It really makes sleep elusive. It doesn't work. There's nothing you can do to put yourself to sleep. So really the message is don't try in any way to fall asleep or fall back to sleep.
This lesson, like other lessons, comes with an assignment. You can find the assignments at sleeptohealthy.com. I'm sure you can guess what today's assignment is. Your assignment, should you decide to accept it, is to compact your sleep. All the instructions are at my sleeptohealthy.com website. Go there and work the plan. It's as simple as that. Well, that's it for Lesson 5. It would be great to hear from you and how this course is helping or frustrating you by using any of the easy-to-use contact methods at sleeptohealthy.com. And now my disclaimer, spoken in one breath. I hope it's obvious, but this podcast is not a substitute for advice from a qualified healthcare professional. The sole purpose of this podcast is to educate and entertain. As we do not know your particulars, we cannot possibly provide professional or medical advice. Your use of the information in this podcast is at your own risk. You don't need tons of sleep trivia and people's opinions about sleep. You just need to know proven instructions on what you can do today to sleep better tonight so you can feel and function better tomorrow. And that's about it. Thanks for joining me in my sleep class. I look forward to seeing you again on the next episode of the Sleep to Healthy podcast. See you then.